Everybody knows it's a mighty big river. Flows from Minnesota to the Gulf of Mexico. Drinks the Alleghenies and the mighty Rocky Mountains. Everybody knows how the Mississippi rolls from northern Minnesota to the Gulf of Mexico. And I know that the river has a rhythm.
We're playing, welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. We're playing during this show the legendary Mark Twain of the Laughing River Jim Post CD, which is based on his live shows that he does in Galena at a place called 111 Main all summer long. Go to jimpost.com. You'll hear more of him. Now you're going to hear from my new best friend, Jay Tunney, who is in here to talk about a book that was sort of came to me through my friend, our mutual friend, Judy Royko. It is called The Prize Fighter and the Playwright, Gene Tunney and George Bernard Shaw. I read it over the last few days, and it's a magnificent, magnificent book. So congratulations, Jay Tunney.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
Your dad, Gene Tunney, is kind of, you know, one of the interesting things about reading so intimately about both of these men is both of these men who in their time were about as famous as you could possibly be have kind of been buried, even George Bernard Shaw, Nobel Prize winner, buried by sort of history's dust. Why do you think that is? I have some theories about your dad, but why do you think both of these characters?
Well, it's a good question, actually. I could probably answer it about my dad a little easier. Mm-hmm. It was a decision on his part to change his life from one of a boxing hero, and not too awfully heroic, I might add, but he had probably the greatest boxing record in the annals of the sport.
I had forgotten that he retired undefeated.
He was defeated once by some joker a long time ago. Yeah, and that was some joker, too. His name was Harry Greb. He was the Pittsburgh windmill light heavyweight and one of the greats. And Dad got beaten by him the first time. And then he beat him four times afterwards just to make sure that everybody knew who was on top. And but they ended great friends. Dad, when he retired undefeated heavyweight champion, and the first one that had ever done that,
right?
He was only in the championship 2 years. He wanted to get away and do something different, and that was one of the things he talked to Shaw about a great deal. And he and Shaw talked, had discussions about when Shaw visited him on the island of Brioni, and that's that comes later.
One of the interesting things about Shaw, it seems to me that your dad first kind of met Shaw when he saw St. Joan, Shaw's great play.
True. About 1923 in New York, he saw it. It came out right about then.
The fascinating thing about your dad is he came from really, really humble and kind of almost, I will say, savage. I want to read one little
hard scrabble.
This is Hardscrabble, ladies and gentlemen. Gene Tunney, who grew up in Greenwich Village, his father was almost everybody in the book's Irish, and I love that. Here is a bit from Jay Tunney's book, talking about his grandfather, who he never met. On evenings when he indulged in his homebrewed gin, Papa liked to debate loudly and vigorously the merits of one fighter versus another. There was nothing young Gene wanted more than to please his tough, opinionated Irish father, and there was no one who seemed harder to satisfy. Papa didn't ruffle Gene's hair as a show of affection as the priest did, and he seemed moody or distracted. Gene was often frightened of him. Just in those few sentences, you really do paint a picture of your dad that gives me the chills.
No, thank you, Rick. Yeah, he was a tough Irishman of the old order of things. He had a gin distillery upstairs in the Coldwater Flat, which was his bathtub, actually. But Dad had a good fight with him. He finally, they used to fight at the dinner table all the time. Dad's siblings would chime in, but Dad was the oldest boy, and he didn't want to be put down by his dad. And his father, the stevedore, Grandfather John, knew, they called him Red, and knew a lot of things, more things than most stevedores know. Because he had been around. He came from England, from Liverpool. They'd started in Ireland. They emigrated to England, to Liverpool. And then at 13, my grandfather got in the Merchant Marine, His Majesty's Merchant Marine, and then sailed all around the globe as a merchant mariner. Ended up in New York. And he had a lot of time to himself on the water. And he read a lot. He ended up reading a lot. And he was with a bunch of English guys. They're all tentative, read rather than do other things, play pinochle or something. The English were just, of course, given to that. And so he always felt he was smarter than the other guys around him in New York at the docks. And he felt the same way at home. And he never gave Gene a chance. He'd never give Uncle Tom a chance to really get the last word in. And
well, here's another few sentences from him. Just trying to give you folks a picture of what Gene Tunney's life was like as a little boy. I'm not trying to bum rap his father too much, but quote, "There were nights when he cried himself to sleep. It didn't matter that other Irish fathers used a whip too, because he knew that some fathers never did." The diversity of Gene's reading and his ability to withdraw into his imagination became essential to his withstanding his father's outbursts. Words became his refuge.
Yes, very true. Very true.
That's an amazing few sentences, I must tell you. He wasn't in school for very long, your dad.
Fifth grade. So he was out by the age of 15. But he had a doctor, Rick. This is where he got a lot of his stuff from, a doctor who had his own library in his office. He was a Dutchman, Dr. Van Vliet, his name was. And he loved Gene. And he had Gene take his bag and go door to door when doctors used to go door to door for their clients. And Dad learned really how to read from that Dr. Van Vliet, and he had a wonderful private library, history books and everything.
Well, he nurtured in your dad what was a lifelong and voracious reading habit.
That's very, very true. And Dad, he kept it going his entire life, and it wasn't just books. In those early days, it was books. But so finally, Dad went off to the Marine Corps for the First World War, and before he left the apartment, he had a battle. He had a fight, a boxing fight with his dad, John Tunney, and they were down in the basement of the flat, and they really went after each other, and the father tried to knock Dad out, tried very hard to knock him out. He just wasn't playing with him. And Dad was just, you know, he was 19, 20, and wasn't fully grown yet. He was still growing up, kind of lanky and strapping. And so he clipped him, and he clipped his father a good number of times. And finally, the father had had enough, and they backed off from each other. But Dad never forgot that fight. His father never forgave him.
Ugh.
And so it went on that way. And so Dad went into the Marine Corps and boxed in the Marine Corps and boxed as a leatherneck, and then won the American Expeditionary Forces Boxing Championship in 1919. They had that right during the armistice over there. And FDR was in the front row there at that fight. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was Under Secretary of the Navy.
Right.
And still walking.
That's right.
Very elegant-looking guy, too.
Well, see, that's one of the things, too, Jay Tunney, in your book, The Prize Fighter and the Playwright, Gene Tunney and George Bernard Shaw, There are celebrities aplenty. We haven't even gotten to the Hemingway years. We got George Bernard Shaw sort of snuck in, but we got to take a little break, and then we will talk about his career as a fighter and the sort of unbelievable disdain that the press felt for him simply because he liked to read. It's a fascinating story, ladies and gentlemen. So stay tuned. We got to take a little break. And here it is. I'll tell you, Sunday afternoon baseball on WGN-TV. That's not right. Weekday mornings, it has everything you need to know and some things you just need to see. WGN-TV Morning News is Chicago's must-watch television.
Life cannot always be good. Life can be so.
That's Jim Post doing his Mark Twain, The Laughing River. Go to jimpost.com and go to your nearest bookstore or your internet and buy The Prize Fighter and the Playwright. Book by Jay Tunney about his father, former heavyweight champion Gene Tunney, and Nobel Prize winner George Bernard Shaw, and how they formed. I don't want to do too much about your dad's boxing career, but he was a great boxer. Period. One of the most famous heavyweight fights in history, called the Long Count, took place at Soldier Field, right down here, against Jack Dempsey. And Jack Dempsey was his. I mean, if you had to create a couple of literary foils, they were perfect. Yep. Here was your dad was drop dead handsome. Dempsey had that kind of pushed in face. Dempsey was what every sports writer loved. Paul Gallico wrote this about boxers.
Good, very good one.
He wrote, "The average pug, when he lets down, means get out of the ring, gets roaring drunk or takes to sitting up all night, pounding nightclub tables with little wooden mallets, reaching hungrily for the powdered nakedness of the girls who march by." That's what sports writers wanted, right? That was the image they wanted, and that was not your dad.
Gene didn't give it to him.
He sure didn't.
That's right. And they didn't. He was into books, and Dad, by now we've talked about that a little bit. He read books in his training camp, and he used to listen to music like Caruso, and from Caruso, some great music also. But his book reading was the main thing that he liked to do with his free time. And he had 5 hours of free time every day. Every boxer who trains has that. Every professional fighter has that. So he did a lot of reading. And
the press really thought that was...
We're the wordsmiths here, Gene. What are you doing? What are you doing?
What are you reading Shakespeare for,
that's
you idiot?
Right. Or Sam Butler, or George Bernard Shaw, or H.G. Wells, or any of them.
One of the interesting things, Jay, that you bring up in this book, that they didn't seem to treat it as an affectation. They treated it as if it was a disease.
That's true. I think they treated it both ways.
Yeah.
They thought it was hideously pretentious of Dad to do that. And I think they did think of it as an affectation. I know Gallico did.
Yeah, Gallico was particularly mean.
He was particularly mean. For a Columbia University graduate, the guy should have known a little better, but he just wanted to make it rough.
Let me ask you another question. I think your dad was obviously terribly smart. He later lectured on various authors at various universities. If in a different kind of world, he could have easily played the tough guy as well. I'm a stevedore's son. My dad used to beat me. I mean, it would not be. Maybe I'm looking through it in the prism of contemporary media light, but he could have played that game. Could he not have?
He could have played it, but his parents were very strict, Rick. The mother, particularly, who was a woman of great character, an Irish woman, immigrant, and father, John, and. They both wanted Gene to grow up to be a gentleman. They had this very firmly in their mind. They just didn't want him to be another street urchin in Greenwich Village, New York. They had plans for Gene. And Gene disappointed them by going off to the Marine Corps on his own choice, didn't even bother to talk to them about it. Mm. And so it was Gene realized that his what stood in front of him was a different kind of a life, that his parents were dead certain that he was to be a gentleman when he grew up, and boxing, by God, was not the way you become
not
a gentleman.
Gentleman sports.
Right. And so Dad was conflicted. He really was conflicted. He wanted boxing because it gave him a chance to...
In the same way, words kind of became his salvation from the beatings that his own father incurred on him. They seem to have become a kind of salvation from the metaphorical beatings that the press would give him.
Well, that and getting away from the Greenwich Village environment also, where there was a bunch of ruffians all the time they were around. And Dad had a different type of personality, a different sensibility, and so it was a bother for him. He never solved that problem in the boxing world, in the professional boxing world. They were bound and determined, the press people, to misunderstand him and be jealous of him, maybe also because of his looks, but also because he was trying to better himself. And who are you trying to better yourself? You're the son of a stevedore. Get down on the docks. Be a scrapper. We want scrappers here. We don't want people that are trying to be students.
Well, you bring up here again another reason that these characters, man, I'm starting to hate the sports writers of the 20s. In interviews, Gene irritated sports writers by talking about boxing dispassionately as a science, as a job, discussing...
Yes.
Bone structure. He analyzed fighters as if he were an engineer, not a battle-tested pug. And that infuriated
him. That infuriated him. And I'll tell you where I think he got that from. I think he picked it up from George Bernard Shaw. That is the way Shaw used to refer to boxers in England when he wrote the many articles that he did on boxing, and he wrote that book.
He wrote a novel.
Called Casual Byron's Profession.
That, interestingly, your dad didn't think much of, did he?
In the beginning.
Yeah, he didn't.
He really didn't.
But Shaw had a good sense of
humor. He was angry, though.
Yeah, of course.
Dad was a little angry at the way he wasn't being answered with, or the people out in California were not being answered properly by Shaw's people in England. It was Jesse Lasky, the head of Paramount Studios, who was trying to talk Shaw into taking his book and turning it into a script. And so Dad had already said, look, I will do the movie. This is Jesse Lasky of Paramount, who had offered to do a movie on Casual Byron's Profession. And so Dad said he'd do it. He'd play Casual Byron if Shaw would adapt his own book.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get Shaw to answer. Then finally he answered after months and months. And he said, well, first of all, he said, you haven't offered enough money for my rights. I want another $100,000.
Sure.
And he was tough. Shaw was tough. And he says, I also want you to get Jack Dempsey in the movie.
Ugh.
So, your dad did, after
defeating Jack Dempsey, not once, ladies and gentlemen, but twice.
Yes.
Why do you think, you were not born yet, why did he quit?
He quit because it was time to quit. He had met the woman that he wanted to marry. And my mom, married to her for 50 years. And that was all there was to it. She definitely did not like boxing and didn't want him to remain in boxing.
She also definitely did not like the attention.
Yes.
The sort of
super
rabid attention that was focused on your dad, because that's
right.
What happens when you're heavyweight champion
right.
of the world.
In those days, having a lot of attention paid to you was very different. Publicity in those days, people really ran from it.
As opposed to craving it,
as opposed to craving it now. It's exactly right.
How did he meet your mom?
How did he?
Yeah.
He met her through a friend that was in the First World War with him, who lived in Greenwich, Connecticut. He was in the Navy. A fellow called Pryor, Sam Pryor. And he was my godfather. And he said, Gene, look, you won the AEF over here in France, and you're a hero in the Marines. And look, I'd love to keep in touch with you. I'm going back to Yale and graduate, and then I'm going into finance like my dad is, and I would love to see more of you out in Greenwich. And so Dad said, okay, it would sound good to me, Sam. I'll follow up on it. But Dad wasn't really sure whether he was going to be victorious in the professional prize-fighting world now that he had gotten out of the Marines, and he where he had been successful, but that's the Marines.
Right.
And it's amateurville in the Marines.
Comparatively, right? Absolutely.
Exactly. They are amateurs. They don't get paid for boxing. So when he got into boxing, he had a rough road hoe. And he, although he had a lot of training now in the Marine Corps and he'd become a pretty darn good boxer, he was always a scientific fighter. And he tried to win on points instead of knocking people's teeth out.
That's what he did with Dempsey.
That's what he did with Dempsey. But he did well. Right? He did well, and he suddenly became middleweight champion, and then he was light heavyweight champion. And then nobody could beat him. Everybody was saying, what is it about this Tunney? My God, look at the way he boxes. He boxes like James Corbett.
The press resented that.
That's right. And they turned it into the fans started resenting it, and, you know, it just got to be that way.
I hate these old reporters.
I do too.
We got to take a break for some news. So I can imagine you do, just the way they treated this guy. He should have been heroic. He should have been one of the towering figures along with, you know, Crazy Babe Ruth and the others of that era.
Hannibal on the Mississippi is where I built my boat.
That's Jim Post doing his Mark Twain and the Laughing River, which he's doing if you get out to Galena this summer. Go see it at 111 Main or just go to jimpost.com. I have about 10 more minutes. It doesn't seem hardly enough, but I'm going to write about Jay Tunney, so maybe you should all start subscribing to the Tribune. His book, The Prize Fighter and the Playwright, Gene Tunney and Bernard Shaw, is a masterpiece of sorts, and I cannot even imagine how difficult it was to write because his father and his mother were private people, and they certainly did not take little Jay on their knee and say, hey, do you want to hear about when my dad used to beat me in Greenwich Village? Or talk much about his boxing. When did you realize? Well, I want to spend the last 10 minutes talking about your mom, too, who died not too long ago, just before her 101st birthday. She wanted, in a way, did she not, Jay, to have the record set straight? You know, they were such private people, and I think your dad got a bum rap for being some kind of like weird intellectual boxer and never really got his due as one of the great boxers of all time. So it was important to her, but she didn't want to get into too much, right?
Yes, that is right. There were a few other would-be biographers wanted at the same time to get in and write the authorized biography of Gene Tunney, right at the same time that I was doing my piece, a kind of a family piece, which is what you have there in front of
which
you.
Which everybody should have on their bookshelf.
I agree. Thank you. I agree with you. And she would not talk to these other would-be biographers because of the fear that all this donkey crap would come out about Dad and being a pretentious clown about reading.
Right,
and
right, right.
All this business she had to suffer through with him when right after they had met and they were falling in love. And he was realizing that he, because of that, he was going to quit boxing and marry my mother after only 2 years as the heavyweight champion, which is a relatively short time.
But it also makes for a great love story.
It's a great
love story.
It is. And they went on to have a wonderful life. Dad, they had four children. I had three siblings. and they traveled a great deal. They did just what my mother wanted. She was a little stifled. That was her own problem in Greenwich, Connecticut. And Dad took
that can be a stifling place. I don't care if it's 80 years ago or today.
You're right, Rick.
Yeah, it can be a stifling place,
right.
Yes.
And but he was a different kind of a jock. He was a different kind of fellow, and he took her around the world, and he had business in other parts of the world, and they traveled. And they knew
everybody.
More interesting people. They knew so many interesting people. And these were not, I hate to tell you, these were not Hollywood people.
Right, yeah, right.
And
he could have. I mean, he did flirt with Hollywood for a while.
Yes, he
made
did.
One
he,
movie.
He made a movie, The Fighting Marine, see, out
but,
there.
But also that many people thought, because your dad was, look it up, you have a computer, Gene Tunney, during a commercial or something, drop-dead movie star handsome. He could have had a career in film, but then again, that would have brought... You know, that same kind of... Well, why are you reading a book between shots or something, you know?
Well, he had a Hollywood experience with that Fighting Marine.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he had a... he thought he had done a good job. And the producer of this film turned out to do The Mark of Zorro soon after, right after this. And it was a great hit. But The Fighting Marine, unfortunately, I must tell you, was not the most successful film that was ever made. And Dad thought he had done a good job because of this producer telling him that he had. But then he found out that when he saw the film released in New York, he went in with a disguise on so nobody would notice who the heck he is to the movie theater. And he saw the worst performance of any leading man in the history of the world, the biggest ham who ever lived, at least in his own opinion. I never saw the movie, so I can't really say my own opinion. But Dad was so upset he would never, ever again go and see a movie. Now, how do you like that for being
especially
upset?
How do you like that in the celebrity-obsessed age in which we live, where almost anybody getting, you know, I'm sure that Shaquille O'Neal watches his movies and thinks he's the, you know, tall black Laurence Olivier, for God's sake.
Without a doubt.
But there's no doubt. The book is absolutely fascinating. You will be able to read about Jay and his dad and Bernard Shaw in the Tribune probably a week from Tuesday if we can pull it together. I will give you more quotes from the book. But here, in talking about his friendship with George Bernard Shaw, and friendship in general, here is something your father wrote. Friendship is the most satisfying connection in life. No man can go very far with strength and courage if he goes alone through the struggle of life. There never was constituted a human heart that did not at some time, in some long and yearning hour, long for sympathy.
Thank you for saying that. That's the line. That's what I use in every one of my talks that I have, that I do give on Dad and Shaw on this book. And I use that. It's the last paragraph, and I think it's the most poignant and the most dramatic paragraph that he's ever written.
Yeah, and he also, that just tells you, all right, I'll give you, Jay Tunney, that your dad was a really voracious reader of all manner of things. He could write, too. And
yes.
My new friend, so can you. This
Thank
book
you,
took
sir.
You 10 years.
Ten years.
Some of it probably very painful. You're finding stuff that
right.
Oh, my God, what happened to my dad? Some of it quite painful, I suppose. But you must be proud of this book.
Very. So proud of it that I'm now doing a play here in Chicago on it, which should be out next year.
Good, because I will be with Judy Royko. Judy and I will be in the front row.
Oh, that's terrific.
You'll get a standing ovation from us before the show even begins. Jay, I cannot tell you what a pleasure it is to meet you. I cannot tell you what a pleasure it is to meet and fully understand your dad.
Thank you.
That your mom lived to be 100 years old would be, and I'm sure she was, just so, so proud because you did tell the story.
Yes.
You focused it on this. It's not about you. It's not about your brothers and sisters, one of whom's pretty well known. It's about your dad and George Bernard Shaw. It's one of the most charming photos. And there was like a 40-year difference in ages between these guys.
41.
And a world of difference between them, you would think.
Yes.
Not so true. They were great friends for a variety of really good reasons.
And Shaw greatly admired Dad, even though Shaw at that time was the most famous man in the world.
Yeah.
And had just gotten the Nobel Prize for Literature. He still admired my dad.
Hey, man.
So amazing.
You're never going to be able to balance the Nobel Prize in Literature with the heavyweight championship. Hemingway would have traded his Nobel Prize,
Hemingway
too.
Would.
Jay, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming in, and we will get together soon. Judy, thank you. Thank you, too. We'll be right back.